something happened while I was running. I've never felt so disgusting. Like at a stop. I've never had a stop before. I walked back in the rain. So if I die during this podcast, know that it was, I'm proud of the run.
Okay.
Here we go. Oh, wait, hold on. There we go. The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook by using promo code RTRS and brought to you by Adam Kasabi, the official realtor of the process. 302-864-8643. Body Bio. Get 20% off Gut Plus and everything else at bodybio.com with code RTRS20. LL Pavorsky Jewelers, where Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners go and get engaged. And Kinetic Skateboarding. Get 9.1% off your first order with code Dave Silver. On the show today, honestly, I thought the Sixers looked fucking awful in a loss in Memphis. However, Tobias Harris did dunk on someone, so that's something. The Sixers are the least liked team in the NBA on social media. The Ricky simulated in OpenAI, and just one of the most puzzling things of all time, Adam, Dave, and Eliza Hardy-Jones of War on Drugs return again because they cannot have enough of us. To talk about a drug sember to remember, their benefit shows at Johnny Brenda's coming up later this month, which are sold out anyway, but they're still coming on the pod. It's great. Let's hope Adam has grapes. Fingers are crossed. Kinetic Skateboarding, I did mention. It is the holiday season. We're a few weeks away from Christmas. Boy, wouldn't Kinetic be a great place to shop for that person in your life that likes just about anything? Sure, skateboards, snowboards, of course, but the clothes, the hoodies, the t-shirts, the pants, the shorts, the sneakers, you're not going to get anywhere else. And the friendly service from Kinetic. Go to kineticskateboarding.com and use code DaveSilver for 9.1% off your first order. No CJ today. Let's see if I can get the video to work. Without any further ado, Amos and the chef. Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a guy soon to be replaced on the podcast by a member of the War on Drugs. That is one, Mike Levin.
Here we are. We're both feeling it. The Sixers are losing, and CJ has abandoned us.
Yeah, boy. This is how it ends. You know, you always want to go out on top, but sometimes it sort of whimpers to the end, and here we are. So look forward with War on Drugs, Adam, Dave, and Eliza from War on Drugs. That is wild to say, Eliza from a War on Drugs as well, will join us later. Boy, do we have some things in store for them. If Adam doesn't bring grapes, I think Adam's banned moving forward. But before we do talk to them, of course, we do have to talk about the 76ers. So, Mike, I went to a wedding last night of a high school classmate. Congratulations, Mark. So I didn't get to watch the game until this morning. And I got home last night and I just, you know, you look at the score, you look at the box score, and I'm like, oh, they lost by 8 or whatever the fuck it was. And Embiid, wow, looks like Embiid went off. But then I watched the game this morning. And man, my opinion, if like a box score can really not tell the story, last night's game was one of those. And I just thought he looked like, let me compare it. You remember the first game he played, right? Against Oklahoma City at home. And I remember this moment against that game toward down the stretch. I think they lost that game, but down the stretch, Steven Adams was on Embiid. And Embiid was just fucking yelling, give me the ball. He can't guard me. He can't guard me. He can't guard me. And Steven Adams, who is a massive human, looked completely overwhelmed by Joel Embiid. Like, it just looked like he couldn't hang with him.
Yeah. This is Embiid's first game ever.
First game ever. And fast forward, what, 6 years later, however many years later, Steven Adams looks essentially exactly the same.
Yeah.
But Joel Embiid looks like honestly, like I thought Steven Adams like owned him a lot last night. And it looked like Embiid didn't want like really any part of it. And it is just like so striking to me, especially with the like the through line of there's Steven Adams looking like exactly the same. And here's Embiid, who it just like, I know he is more skilled now, but just looks to my eye significantly like not as good. I don't know. It was just sort of that game felt like a real bummer Embiid game to me, even though the box score looked great.
Well, he's definitely better than he was as a rookie. He's just not as bouncy and vibrant.
But also not as willing to, like the guys that are his size or bigger just feel like he doesn't really want much of a part of it anymore, I guess. And that, like, looking at the way he treated Adams then versus the way he treated Adams now, I don't know. Like, maybe I'm overreacting, but I was watching it this morning and I was like, oh man, you just look like you're not into this.
Yeah, I mean, I think there were a couple plays where Adams got him. Adams was still a minus one and Embiid was a plus nine. Like, I know that doesn't tell the whole story, but I think that there was a stretch in the third quarter where Steve Adams got a bunch of rebounds. He got 10 offensive rebounds. Like, that'll make a difference. He blocked his 3-point shot. That'll make a difference. But like, Embiid still made a bunch of really, really nice plays and he got by him a bunch of times. From this game, the Grizzlies are a very good team and they're the kind of like energetic, bouncy in your face team that the Sixers often, I was worried about would look like just kind of slow and come up short against. But I thought the Sixers' energy was relatively high. I did think they matched matched some of that intensity. The Grizzlies are just good, and this is what happens when you don't have your two best guards. The Grizzlies are missing Desmond Bane, who rules, but like, it's hard to generate offense without both Maxey and Harden, and it wasn't a great, like, it wasn't on the scale of what's been the past couple weeks. It wasn't a great Milton game. But with Joel, like, I think this is what happens when he is required to do so much. Like, Steven Adams is a big, huge man. He's leaning on him all game long. He sort of has a bad third quarter, Embiid does, and the game gets a little bit out of reach at that point. And he's just required to do so much when those other guys aren't there, that I think it's natural. And Steve Adams played really, really well, but it didn't bug me as much as it seems to bug you.
Don't you think though that he asks for that like he wants all of that responsibility, right? Like do you think like on some level he thinks he wants it, but then the reality of all of that is maybe more of a strain than he bargained for, like, you know? And obviously, to your point, without Maxey or Harden offensively, there's going to be more on him. Mm-hmm. But like, he's the guy who says the offense should go through him. So, totally. You know, I'm sort of like, I understand what you're saying, but also that's what he says that he wants.
No, for sure. I mean, I don't think that the offense should go through him all the time. I think he thinks he wants it in this game, I get why he's like, this is a tough game on the road. The only way we have a chance to win this game is if I take over. And he tried to. And he had a bunch of really nice plays in that, some good stop and starts, some good finishes around the rim. I really loved the dunk attempt at the end there, even though Jaren blocked him in a nice play. There's a couple times, I mean, I've been railing against Embiid for not just like dunking the ball. There's a couple times when he just like laid it up and it rimmed out or something. And it's just like, just dunk. And so I liked him attempting it there. but yeah, when it counts in the playoffs, when Maxey and Harden are there, Embiid should do less so that he doesn't wear down over the course of playing 40 minutes, which, by the way, why is he playing 41 minutes in a regular season game on the road without our second and third best players?
You mean, why isn't he playing more minutes? I think that's Doc's question.
Yeah, more of them. Not a game that bugged me. I thought Tobias played excellent.
The dunk. And he tried another dunk. He tried a second one or one before that didn't work. But it was like, seems to dunk. He's like the most aggressive dunker on the team, which is
which is upsetting.
Yeah.
He is the most aggressive dunker on the team. That really is 100% right and very upsetting.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't dunk that much and will frequently just like lay it up or something. But when he gets in there, he can get up sometimes. And over Jaren, that was a really, really nice dunk. I thought he was just like quick, decisive, made a bunch of really good choices. Obviously shot 5 of 6 from three. Moved the ball well. I thought he defended pretty well. It's just a really, really good, solid Tobias game for a game that he was, you know, questionable with an illness. Just like they're not going to win that many games against good teams without Maxey and Harden. Like I think that's sort of a flat analysis, but kind of right. I mean, it's the interesting thing that I wonder if it is quantifiable is like what this team looks like when Embiid is out for the entire game and they know that and they have to work around that for a full game and the other team knows that versus when Embiid is out for like 6 minutes at a time and what it looks like in those 6 minutes. Because it feels like there's a different mindset. It feels like they cover him different. It feels like there's a different spirit about them. And this was a tough, I didn't think Bilal Powell played too bad. He played 6 minutes. They didn't get really get a chance to do anything. Like he was fighting in there. The Grizzlies are just like ferocious. Their second unit is ridiculous. Brandon Clark's awesome.
Yeah.
My boy David Roddy looked good. Santi Aldama's awesome.
Roddy looks ridiculous on the court. He looks like if Fred VanVleet was like an inflatable,
that's
and
right.
You walked up to him and inflated him more.
That's right.
That's what he's
exactly like. Right.
Adam Kasebe is the official realtor of the process. Kasebe is how you spell it. He's the only realtor you need. Now, look, if you're going to buy or sell a home in Delaware or Maryland, he will do it for you. But if you're in PA, New Jersey, New York, and you don't have a realtor, just go to Kasebe first because he will find you one. Whether you're buying or selling somewhere else, he'll interview realtors and find you the right one. But as far as him and as far as his team, based out of Long and Foster and Bethany Beach, they're going to take care of you on the Delaware beaches. Delaware beaches are beautiful. Have you ever been to Rehoboth, Lewis, Bethany, Dewey? If you want a home down there and pay like a tenth of the property tax that you're going to pay in New Jersey, if you want to be able to rent it out all summer except for a few weeks and basically pay for the mortgage, find Kasebe. Just reach out to them. There's so many people have moved further away from cities because they can do remote work. Delaware Beach is a great place to do it. And the only person that you can use is Adam Kasebe, the official realtor of the process, Kasebe. 302-864-8643 is his cell. You can call or text him or email him, adam@processrealtor.com. That's adam@processrealtor.com. Once again, they're taking care of all of Delaware, all of Maryland. But if you need any other state, you go to Kasebe. Once again, 302-864-8643. Anything else from that game?
Yeah, I mean, it was nice to see them work back into it. I think they hit a bunch of threes to get there. I like that. I mean, Embiid wasn't his best like distributing game. I thought he like made a couple bad choices, but he did like get guys open a bunch of times and had 8 assists. That's nice. A
couple of sloppy passes again, too.
Yeah, always sloppy passes.
Finally, that's bothering me.
Good.
Like, I've been able to like compartmentalize it for years, but I cannot now for some reason.
Yeah. It's been me riding this train for a long time by myself. Yep. But yeah, I mean, also Embiid had a bunch of blocks and felt like he was protecting the rim. That's been like over the last, like since he got back or maybe a little bit before also, like starting to be like rim protecting guy again, not just like deferring shots and like making them take hard ones, but like actually like get his hands on the ball. Feels that way at least. But yeah, I mean, you know, there's not enough guys that can do stuff against like a swarming defense like that. Like PJ Tucker is out there doing his thing.
Might have been the worst PJ Tucker game of the year, I thought.
It wasn't great.
Yeah.
Matisse.
By the way, Doc, loving the Matisse and Tucker minutes. What's that?
Did he say that? Or
no, I am. Oh. I'm just saying, hey, Doc.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yes.
That'll work.
yeah, I mean, like, Dan House made a couple plays, but like, you know, Niang looked slow, like wasn't hitting the shots, like Korkmaz has hit a couple things. But it's like when you go further down our depth, like the Grizzlies' depth is better. we're missing our guys. You know, you look at the, you just look at the bench minutes for them, bench minutes for us. Like they're a, it was an overmatched situation. I thought there were some good things to take from the game, but ultimately, not a bad loss in my mind.
Yeah, well, I guess like losing in Memphis without Harden, I mean, without Harden and Maxey is like whatever. Even if you have Harden and Maxey, losing in Memphis is not the biggest deal in the world. I just like, I came away from it just like I just,
you got something in your craw about Embiid lately.
It just feels like he's going through the motions this year a little bit. And like I guess I'm sort of at the point right now with him where it is time. Like as far as age and career arc and all of the and teammates and all of those things, like it is time. Because you're gonna wake up one day and it's weird, like skills typically sometimes they diminish slowly. You're like, oh, it's a little worse. But usually what happens is all of a sudden you wake up one day and you're just like not as good as you used to be.
Blake Griffin,
right. And especially with a player who's had as many injuries as Joel has, right? Like these things and the size of him and all of those things, like these things will add up and he'll just wake up one day. And like look, he has a nice soft jumper and he's big and like he could sort of like stretch out his career if he wanted to. But as far as the time where he's going to be dominant, there's just like the window's going to be small, man. It's just not going to be that big. And like, I guess I just, maybe I'm projecting, but I guess I just see this guy that like isn't ready for it. And less than, I don't, he is who he is going to be what it is. But like, I'm feeling it. Like I'm watching him. I'm like, fuck. Like I want to see him just ball out constantly. And there's something wrong and I can't figure it out. I can't totally put words to it.
And you feel like you want that in the regular season.
Yes. Because all great players, like, look, he's just like, this is not like the Rockets after they won the championship, where like the Hakeem Rockets, where you can be like, eh, we'll waltz the regular season, or the LeBron Cavs one of the years. It's like, eh, we're not going to try. We're just going to turn on when the playoffs come around. Like, here's a team led by two guys who have like famously failed in the playoffs. Like famously failed. So I just don't think that, and by the way, like they're like seventh or eighth in the East right now. And, you know, there's some other teams who are underperforming compared to expectations, Miami and Toronto. They're not the only team that is. You're going to wake up one day and you're going to be in a fucking playing game or something. And you can't do this. And I just look around the league at the players who we call MVP candidates, Jokic, Luka, not all perfect players, of course, Giannis, all that. And they're all just fucking obliterating everyone every game. Now, I'm not watching every game, of course, because you could look at this Embiid thing and say, hey, look, he's, you know, he had 37, whatever the fuck he had. But there's something that not
there. I think that's what it is. I think you are in tune with Embiid enough, and we are now starting to take for granted the things that he does and start to pick apart the things that he's not doing. Mm-hmm. On the road against Memphis, against a physical fucking fish monster from New Zealand, a plus 9, 35, 11, and 8 on 26 shots. Like, that is, like, I know that, I understand that that you can look at that game and feel like you wanted more, and their third quarter was tough, and the offensive rebounding that Steven Adams had, which he's very good at, was frustrating. But I think that when you look at those other guys, or like the guys from the past, Hakeem or whoever, you're not as in tune with them as you are with Embiid. And so
that's true. That's totally true.
There's a little bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy of Embiid hasn't done it yet. He hasn't made the playoff run yet. And so we are looking at him and any weaknesses, any issues that he has during a game, which everybody has. I'm watching, you know, if you follow other, you know, I follow Mavs writers, I follow Bucks writers, when Luka or Giannis does something annoying, like they're on him for it. In a way that we probably wouldn't feel because he's not your guy. You're not watching everything of it. So I think there's a little bit of that. But the only way for Embiid, he could play as well as he played in the regular season. He's been second MVP during the last 2 years. He could play an incredible regular season. It's not going to do it until he does it in the playoffs. I think we feel that. I think nationally people feel that as well.
So the Action Network put out a did a study, I guess, is the maybe making it seem more complicated than it is. But Action Network printed a thing. They used a program called Linkfluence, which assessed listening data to analyze negative sentiment across all teams from the NFL, NBA, NHL, MLB, and MLS between July 2020 and July 2021 to discover which teams are viewed most negatively online by rate of negative posts. The number one most negative team viewed online was your Philadelphia 76ers.
Hey, here they come.
There's the championship. Show your love. Yep. Now, of that 100% of...
How do they quantify this? I mean, I guess it doesn't matter. But
come on. Yeah. It's just...
Let's dig into the data.
It's just internet fodder. My question for you is, of that negative, of those negative comments, what percent of those negative comments were from Sixers fans?
Most. Yeah. I don't think they can quantify. Like, negative is like, it's
well,
such
you could. I mean. Dude, as we'll find out later, computers can do a lot of things right now.
But I think that there's context, and I think that there's like a middle ground between like negative or positive, you know? I feel like me saying I'm going to like open up my intestines and like let them spill out if Doc doesn't play B-Ball Paul. Like, what is that? Is that negative, I guess?
Well, of course it's negative.
But it's something that's more specific than that than just like broadly negative.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something about the team. I think there's something about the fan base. I think there's a little more nuanced stuff than in the fan base than there is maybe in other fan bases. I would give us and our people credit for that.
Man, nuance is just a really nice way to put that.
That's right.
Overall, the Sixers were number four. Number one was the Raiders, which makes some sense. Really passionate, lunatic fan base. Also, lots of people hate the Raiders, at least historically. Maybe not as much anymore.
Yeah.
Followed by the Dallas Stars and Arizona Coyotes.
What are your opinions about those franchises?
I don't have much of an opinion. And then the Sixers, Bears, Leafs, Canucks, Sabres, right. Raptors, and Broncos. And the Eagles, it looks like, were the 10th most negative in the NFL, right behind the Miami Dolphins. Number one, as I mentioned, was the Raiders. So,
bizarre.
Finally, wanted to bring this up. Of course, we post Spotify questions. I'm sure you don't have one for this one, so I'll think of one. There's no CJ this time.
Call him up.
But the Spotify question last time, and we're getting tons of responses. So under the pod, if you listen on Spotify, there's a thing where we ask a question, you can give answers. So the question we asked on the last pod, which Sixers, you could age one Sixer 5 years and de-age another Sixer 5 years. So you have to give two players. We got a bunch of good answers here. First, from Patrick, de-aging Harden 5 years is an obvious win. They could safely offer him an extension. Age Thibel 5 years, so hopefully he's learned to dribble and shoot. Win-win. From Matt, age Trez 5 years so he's retired, and then make 5 years. Make Harden younger 5 years. The straight-ahead answer that most people gave was Maxey, aging him 5 years and de-aging Harden.
I don't want to waste Maxey's prime. That is, I think, the thing that they're missing. Is
but
Maxey's
he's not
good right
in
now.
His prime
He's
yet.
Good right now. He's very good right now. David Springer is not good right now. And in 5 years, he will be good. And that would be good.
James said, DH Harden, so he's got more spring in his step. And age Tobias, so he's off the team.
Tobias has been good, man.
And then...
he's just been good.
Two more. Matt
if he's
said,
5 years older, he's still making $41 million a year. That's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah, we're not speeding up 5 years. He's just 5 years older, so he would still be on the contract. Uh-huh. From Matt, I would age Paul Reed so Doc has to play him since he'd be a vet. Then I'd take 5 years off of Harden. And then finally, from Celery Sizzle, I think this is pretty clear. Jaden Springer gets aged 5 years to see if he actually develops. He won't. I'm sorry, Mike. And Harden gets 5 years younger. So there you go. And then actually, before we get to, we don't really have time.
While we're waiting for them, how do you feel about how much zone the Sixers play lately?
Well, Like, so it seems like at this point, sort of a survival thing because mm-hmm. they're down people. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like it's wild because it works better than you think it would in the NBA zone defense. Like zone defense shouldn't work in the NBA and it does. And the Heat, like obviously have done it to the Sixers a lot. Mm-hmm. I guess when you're using players like Paul Reed, PJ Tucker, Matisse Thybulle, playing zone is like pretty cool because it allows those guys to sort of like take chances and create turnovers. And I guess it's a way to keep their, what's it called up? Not wear them down during the season. So I don't hate it.
And then there's less of a, you know, you're not exposing, even when Maxey and Harden get back, you're not exposing them, Maxey into the post or Korkmaz off the dribble, that kind of thing. It's like there's people behind them. I like playing the zone. I know it's like, I'm saying for the Sixers, I like it. I think it is a way to slow them down. If there's sometimes to be miscommunication between when they're playing a zone, sometimes they don't know they're in it and they'll get open shots out of it. But I feel like it's a way to utilize stuff. It's a way to slow the offense down. It's a way to grind some of their stuff. Like the Sixers aren't getting out in transition that much anyway. And so if they're slowing the other offense down, like they're preventing that a little bit, if that works out, I think it's something they can use going forward.
To have a tool in the tool belt. The thing that was funny the other night was when Tobias was like, we never practice this. And Doc was like, we work on it all the time.
All the time. That's very funny. That's honestly, Tobias made his $41 million right there.
Yep. Before we get to the war on drugs, returning to the Ricky, Body Bio is a sponsor of the Ricky, who we love. Body Bio is a family-owned and operated supplement company here in Jersey that the thing is most impressive about Body Bio to me, and I've never obviously worked this closely with a supplement company before, is like how often they're working on things and changing things and because the science always evolves, so they're always evolving it. They have a new product called Gut Plus, which Mike has had success with. Mm-hmm. And it is really the only gut supplement you need. A lot of people take probiotics, which are not harmful to you. Obviously, probiotics in your body are good. The problem is that you need like really a perfect match for that to work with the right probiotic in your body. So Body Bio came up with Gut Plus, which is an all-in-one prebiotic and postbiotic. And what it does very simply is the prebiotic gets rid of the bad bacteria, allows your body to create good bacteria, probiotics, and then the postbiotic comes in and gets rid of all of those bad symptoms that you're trying to get rid of, the bloat, all of those kinds of things. Like if you're going to take one gut supplement, it is Gut Plus. Take one a day, maybe two a day, and you'll see a difference almost immediately. The listeners who have reached out to us saw a difference like almost immediately. So between Gut Plus, Elite, which have been two great supplements for the Ricky family, as well as the liposomal vitamin C and everything else they offer. It's just check it out. Go to bodybio.com and use code RTRS20. You get 20% off, not just Gut Plus or Elite, but anything at the Body Bio website. Once again, bodybio.com and promo code RTRS20 for 20% off. Shall we welcome? Now I see Eliza, who is now part of the stream. I see Dave, who is now part of the stream.
Hello.
No Adam and Grapes yet. So we'll see.
He's probably at the grocery store, actually.
We did warn that if Adam didn't bring Grapes, he is banned from the pod forever.
I'm sure he'll have something.
Yeah. How are you all this morning, this fine morning?
Great.
Doing great. Yeah. Happy to be here.
How was the tour? It seemed like you guys were on tour for a very long time.
Oh, yeah. A lot of shows.
through Europe?
Well, yep. Healthy amount of Europe. I think we did 100 and what did we end up at? 110 shows?
Something like that.
For the year, which sounds like a lot, but then we actually probably had 80 or 90 or 100 travel days as well. So it's a good chunk of the year, but it was fucking awesome. Yeah, great year. It was weird. We started the tour in like deep Omicron. And then like ended just recently. So we kind of saw the transformation of the pandemic, you know, in slow motion.
Yeah. 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 Well, and of course the entire tour cycle kicked off just over a year ago, right here on the podcast. So I think it is fair to mention that the success of this album cycle could, if I'm not saying it is causation or correlation, but I think you could look back to that if you wanted to and say that maybe it started here.
Take the credit.
100%. Yeah.
Eliza, what was that like for you going on tour? Is this your first time touring with drugs?
With these guys, yeah. It was great. I'm really used to being sort of like an itinerant side woman. I'm used to like having to like dip into a new group of people and like learn everybody's personalities and like catalogs. And because I knew these guys for so long, it was actually really easy. I didn't have to be like, what is this person's trigger word?
right.
And what is Dave's?
Yeah, I know Dave's triggers. I know how to avoid them already. Yes, it was great. It was super fun. Shows were great. Music's great. Hangs are great. Best dudes. It was awesome. Super fun.
So like, it's funny. Like, you're like in War on Drugs now.
Apparently I am.
Well, I mean, I think that's cool. I don't know. Like
that's very cool.
I have to read you. I've been holding on to this email for like weeks now, hoping that when the band returned, I would get to read this email. Hold on. Cause it shows the insanity of our listeners as like the importance. Oh, there's Adam. Hold on. Let me bring him in and let's make sure he has grapes. Hang on.
Yeah, don't let him in if he doesn't have
them. Yeah. 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 Hold on.
Bring grapes for everyone, Adam.
Yeah. All right. There we go. Adam
yes.
added.
What's up, man?
Oh no. Doesn't sound. Look like are you muted?
Guy doesn't know sound very well.
Yeah.
Why would he?
If only he had some microphones.
Yeah. No.
Not a chance.
Yeah. Oh man. Oh, now you're muted again. Now you're
I had a similar thing where I set up a mic through my best preamp into my compressor like 20 minutes ago and I had it all set up and then like I was testing the mic and I could fucking not get it to work with whatever the StreamYard is. And eventually I was like, fuck it. I just grabbed my earbuds or whatever.
So Adam, it looks like you are muted on your end.
He keeps going back and forth. He's trying it.
Because I'm there we go. Now you're unmuted.
Still not working. No. It's probably the wrong settings.
Yeah. At the bottom. Wait, hold on. I can edit his mic settings. Hold on. No, but I can't edit what his mic is. This is amazing.
War on Drugs is more of a visual, visual band anyway.
This is good material for you.
I could always call you and bring you up that way.
While we're waiting, Eliza, can you tell the story of how you got asked? Like, how do you go from like travel with the band to being like, hey, can you be in it like for real?
Is it like, are we going steady type thing?
Right,
before you answer, the email was, this came from Dan. I saw War on Drugs live in Toronto a few months back, and Eliza Hardy Jones was playing keyboards and singing. Did that happen because of the Ricky?
Yes. It was definitely the, you know, everybody heard me on the Ricky, and they were like, we got to get that lady in the band. No, you know, it happened because we've been friends for 15 years. So it was an easy ad.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
There it is.
What's up?
He's pumped. Are we live?
Yeah, we're live.
What a show.
Yeah.
What a show you guys put together.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Wait, so what was the, am I allowed to ask, like, what was the ask?
The moment?
We're going steady type thing.
So I think the moment that I, like, actually knew I was in the band was we had, like, done, you know, like, some rehearsals.
Adam showing cereal right now.
Cereal, eating Cheerios.
That's good. That's very good.
It's not grapes, but it's good enough.
It's good enough. We did, like, a 7-week tour, and then I came home and Dave's wife, Lindsay, was in town and she was like, oh, let's go get some coffee. We were having coffee and she was like, how does it feel to be in the band? And I was like, am I in the band? She's like, yeah, you're in the band. So that's how I knew. That's how good. I knew I was in the band.
She made herself indispensable pretty much right away. So
it reminds me, years and years ago, I took my wife, then girlfriend, to go see Dashboard Confessional at Trocadero. And we had been dating for a month or something. And I introduced her to somebody as my girlfriend. And she disappeared for like 45 minutes. And I came back and I was like, what's wrong? And she was like, we never talked about me being your girlfriend. I was like, oh, Jesus Christ. I was like, are you? She goes, I guess. I was like, all right. Yeah, good. Then we're done. We're done. We're official now. So sometimes the best, most lasting official things happen without any sort of, you know, big headline. Yeah.
I like to have the conversation.
Yeah.
I like to sit someone down.
Be like, press you conference. And I. Going steady.
I like to be very clear about roles. That's how I am as a coach.
Before we go any further, first of all, welcome, War on Drugs. I would promote the shows that you have later on, but they sold out in like 3 minutes. So A Drug Sember to Remember, which will benefit the Fund for the School District of Philadelphia, which is a nonprofit that raises money for the Philly Public Schools. Three shows at Johnny Brenda's, which is so cool for, by the way, a band that headlines fucking Madison Square Garden to play three shows at Johnny Brenda's in the hometown is awesome. So December 19th, 20th, and 21st, all sold out, went on sale yesterday. But also, here's, if you don't have tickets, there're going to be a bunch of auctions, which with really awesome like sports stuff and music stuff and War on Drugs stuff. And so go to the War on Drugs website, sign up for the newsletter, and you'll get a newsletter when the auctions come out. What year now is this for Drugsember?
Third year, but we took some years off for the pandemic, obviously.
Oh, so. Right.
We were hoping to make it like an annual.
We did 18, 19 now.
Yeah, so we had whatever to take 2 years.
It's a, I guess like from a show standpoint, you're no stranger, obviously, to playing clubs, but the idea of playing like really huge venues and then going in and taking like that and moving it into a place the size, like where's Johnny Brenda's hall? 300 people, something like that.
Yes. 220.
Which is wild. Is that like a brain adjustment? Like going from something that big to something that tiny? Is it something you look forward to get to play like a little hot box kind of show? What's the brain process there?
Yeah, I guess we're gonna find out. You know, we haven't. we haven't done this in a long time. You know, and we have quite the stage apparatus now. So we'll have to figure it out on the fly. But yeah.
Adam's playing with his background right
now. Yeah, Adam's now in front of a brick wall.
It's his first time using video during the pandemic. He's getting excited about it.
Yeah.
All the possibilities.
Adam is at the stage of video call development, like where we all were in week two of the pandemic, where you're changing backgrounds during the call.
I'm excited for when he becomes a horse.
I was mentioning earlier, we drove down to a wedding last night. So we spent a few hours in the car and I put on, I Don't Live Here Anymore. And the album does seem to like capture early winter in a really like cool way that I guess I hadn't noticed before as we were driving in the cold and it feels like a winter album. When you think about that record, and the, now a year afterwards, like where do you put it? Like, what is the thing that you were trying to get people to feel? Like, did it come across the way that you would hope now that you see all of the reaction and you see fans like reacting to the songs? Like, does it feel the way that you wanted it to? Adam, what do you want to talk about?
I'm just trying to make these grapes my background. You know what I mean? something about the resolution of the image I downloaded. It's not working.
Oh, that's a grape. Those are grapes.
This is not working like I thought it was.
No, it's perfect.
Well, I appreciate the effort.
But, The
don't know. What are you going to do for the next 6 months? How about that? There's no tour right now till June.
Well, aside from these shows. Episodes do we do a week?
Of the pod?
We do three?
We do two a week.
Well, then it's 2 days.
You got to watch all the Sixers games. You got to be ready to talk about it.
Yeah.
Fine.
You might do a better job if you don't. You might be happier. You might be better result.
That's true.
I'm wondering if you all are willing to play along on this. So we got a tweet, and I thought it would be fun for you all to play along from a gentleman named Scott Moran. And Scott used OpenAI, which is an artificial intelligence engine that is open for people to use, to simulate what he calls the ultimate Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast, in which Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons both appear and end up fighting each other. Here's the prompt that he gave OpenAI. And what I was hoping is that we could all play a role. Somebody would be Joel, somebody would be Ben, somebody would be Mike, somebody would be me, and somebody would be the narrator. Wow. And I sent it to your manager, so you have it. Here is
I'll be Mike.
Okay. Good. So Adam's Mike. Good. Dave, who do you want to be?
How about I'll be Ben.
Okay. Dave's
I'll play
Ben.
The heel.
Okay. Eliza?
You can be Joel.
I'm JoJo, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And then
Spike, you yourself.
I'm me. And then you're the narrator?
That's great.
Okay. So here was the prompt. Write a scene. Now, the fact that, like, all right, write a scene in the style of Quentin Tarantino where a narcissistic Ben Simmons is making excuses for himself and blaming his teammates while explaining why he refused to play and demanded a trade from the 76ers and join the Nets to a sarcastic Spike Eskin and joke-loving Mike Levin on the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. During the interview, Joel Embiid shows up and challenges Ben Simmons to a cage fight. Ben accepts. Mike Levin referees the match. Include outcome of the fight. Okay.
Wow.
All right. So everyone knows their roles and has the script in front of them.
Computers can just do anything these days.
Yes. All right. Okay. So I'm me. So Ben, why did you decide to leave the 76ers and demand a trade to the Nets?
Well, Spike, it's simple. My teammates just couldn't keep up with my level of play. I mean, come on, I'm a superstar. I deserve to be on a team that can match my talent and drive for success.
Adam, this is you. This is,
Adam,
this is you. This is you as me. This
great boy.
Crashed again.
Oh, no.
The graves are gone.
I'm back. I'm back. I got
okay.
it. Okay,
all right.
Excuse me, Ben, but didn't you average a career low in points per game this season?
Sounds like me.
That's just a fluke, Mike. I was carrying the team on my back, and my teammates just couldn't handle the pressure. They're the ones who cost us games, not me.
And what about when you refused to play in the playoffs and demanded... Oh, that didn't really happen. And what about when you refused to play in the playoffs and demanded a trade? What was the reason for that?
I was just trying to take control of my career and make the best decision for myself. I want to win a championship, and I knew the 76ers weren't going to be able to do that.
All right.
So I made the move to the Nets where I can be surrounded by other superstars and have a real chance at winning it all.
Just then, Joel Embiid walks into the studio and overhears the conversation.
Ben, you can't blame everyone else for your shortcomings. You're a damn good player, but you need to take responsibility for your own actions. And if you really want to prove yourself, let's have a cage fight right now and see who the real superstar is.
Escalates to cage fight pretty quick.
Right away to the cage fight. You're on, Joel. I'll show you who the real superstar is.
All right, let's do this. I'll be the referee for this match. No holds barred. Anything goes. Let's get ready to rumble.
Okay, joke loving. The two players enter the cage and start throwing punches at each other. Ben Simmons tries to use his quickness to his advantage, but Joel Embiid's strength and power proves to be too much. After a few minutes of intense fighting, Joel lands a powerful punch that knocks Ben Simmons to the ground. Adam, my line is great.
The winner is Joel Embiid. The King of Philadelphia has once again proven his dominance in the cage.
That's me. Oh, there's the grapes.
There it is.
See, Ben, talent alone isn't enough. You have to have heart and determination to be a true champion. You have just left the 76ers, but you'll never be able to escape my shadow.
This isn't over, Joel. I'll be back, and I'll be even stronger next time.
As Ben Simmons storms out of the studio, Spike Askin and Mike Levin look at each other with amusement. That's never happened.
Well, that was unexpected. But I have to say, I enjoyed watching Joel put Ben in his place.
That is something you'd say.
Yep.
Absolutely. And who knows? Maybe we'll see a rematch in the future. Until then, this has been another exciting episode of the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast.
I feel like all my lines sucked.
Scene.
I feel like the computer really had no handle on what my vibe is whatsoever.
Yeah, totally. Pretty amazing. If anyone who is listening out there who knows how to do this, is there a situation that you guys would like to be placed in that you would like our open AI to simulate?
Are you saying right now?
No, I'm asking War on Drugs. Would War on Drugs like to be simulated in any way? Of course, there will be somebody listening who will do that. Could you think
it would be really great if we could somehow, if we had recorded like a tour's worth of John Natchez's stories.
Yes.
And then have the AI
regurgitate
make up
them.
Its own version of a John Natchez story.
I mean, that would be incredible.
It would be incredible.
Truly incredible.
John Natchez, you know, our baritone sax player.
Does he have bad stories? It sounds like he has bad stories.
I don't even know if they're good or bad anymore.
They're incredible. They're incredible.
He's a Boston guy. You know, we knew each other a long time ago. He's a Boston guy. And when I told everyone, I was like, who wants to go on the pod this Saturday? He was the first one to pipe in and be like, I'm going to go on and start talking shit about the Sixers, talk about the Celtics. And I was like, all right, cool. You're confirmed. And he was like, I want to go on. I was just kidding. But it'd be great to get him on here and just let him loose. You know what I mean? Give him two cups of Joe and just have him start railing.
Really? He's that good. We got to give him his own episode then. Unhindered.
Front room of a bus, front lounge of a bus is different than like a Zoom screen.
Sure. Who knows if how so?
And by the way, I had no idea. I had never heard of the fund for the School District of Philadelphia before, like a nonprofit that actually benefits a city funded entity like that, you know, like a government funded entity, like public schools. What is the connection there? Did you all find that charity? Was it management? How did you get connected with them?
Actually, one of our best buddies, Severin, works for the school board, and
Spike is I think he thinks we're laundering the money under this. I think he's trying to be like, I don't know anything about it.
We open up the books. Let's just take a look.
This thing?
Like Googling fund for school district of Philadelphia and 503. Yeah.
Seychelles, interesting.
Yeah. No. Not questioning that at all. Just hadn't heard of it before.
No, yeah, our friend Severin works there.
Okay. Works for the school board.
It works for the school board, and the fund, it's just like the money just goes straight to the schools. There's no overhead whatsoever.
Wow.
You know,
the other day I asked where the money went for the first 2 years, because you can basically, you give it to the fund and you can kind of like, I remember at the time, a couple of years ago, we got an email like, oh, they're going to give this chunk to this much. So we had, for the first 2 years, we did the thing. We did $25,000 went to a Philadelphia High School for Girls Dash program, which is a music program. $11,000 went to Avery D. Harrington Elementary for school uniforms. $3,500 went to Anna L. Lingelbach Elementary School's playground. And $3,500 went to Parkway Center City Middle College for new lockers.
Honestly,
I love it. It's a great thing because it's like actual things, like not just a blanket, like, oh, some music program. It's like things that day-to-day students, teachers need, you know, they need new lockers. They need uniforms. It's awesome. It's a great, great, great nonprofit. And we're happy to, raise a lot of money for it. It's great.
That is one of the things that obviously not every nonprofit that doesn't do that is like they work hard and do great things. But one of the things that does That is kind of a bummer sometimes, is when you raise a bunch of money, like it just goes into this pot and you don't see the direct result of it. And the fact that they show you those specific things, I think not only is meaningful to you, of course, who raised the money, and to the schools, but like to people who support it. I feel like, you know, your fans who support it, it feels like there's something that actually happened, like a result of the money that was raised. And I think it's really good for everybody, you know?
Yeah.
The fact that it's War on Drugs lockers, and kids would be hopefully not putting drugs in their lockers, it's kind of be interesting a little bit. If there's like maybe a plaque on there that says like drugs lockers.
Drugs lockers.
Kind of tough.
We did have
just a little joke thing, of like a joke loving thing that I would do, that I would say. Something like that.
We did have a Ricky. I sent this over to Dave yesterday. You know, we posted before the tickets went on sale yesterday, about an hour before. We said, "Hey, tickets go on sale in an hour," on Twitter, and here are the dates. And someone tweeted us back, you know, a couple hours after tickets went on sale, and they were like, "So, what are the tickets I just got for December 3rd?" And I was like, "I don't know." And he was like, "It says Work Drugs on them," and I'm like, well, Work Drugs a whole other band.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then Work Drugs chimed in. They were like, "Yo, come see us.
Come to the show anyway." Yeah.
That guy should go. Work Drugs is good. They've been around a long time.
Absolutely. Work Drugs has been around for a while. Like, definitely not a stranger to anybody in the Philadelphia music scene. But yeah, it is. I could imagine that disappointment. I guess the PSA I would say is that next time you go to buy tickets for a specific band, it should have the band name on the thing that you're purchasing. I think it would be a solid thing to look for moving forward.
Read the words.
Yeah, read the words.
So yeah. What is life like after a tour in the months? Like, what are the days occupied by?
Well, Mike, we leave tour. I live on a vineyard, as you can see from out my window.
Yeah, huge grapes. Honey, I Shrunk the Grapes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is just I'm getting off this podcast and I'm going to go out and pick a few.
Well, I imagine, you know, it does feel
plastic bags where I live, you know.
Just a life full of cereal and grapes.
Right from the vine.
Yeah. I can imagine there's like a feeling of relief immediately, probably after like the first couple of days, like, oh boy, I can exhale.
Spike's gonna guess.
Well, I
think you have it wrong.
It's, oh really?
When you first get home, it's horrible.
Yeah, we call it the reentry period.
Yeah, okay. The reentry is horrible. Hard. Yeah,
because have you seen Interstellar?
Yeah.
your family at home is used to operating the way they operate, and then you come in with your like tour energy and you're like whatever, and the family at home is like, yo, like calm down, like they are overwhelmed by you. And then you go from like having your days being super structured and like getting to play music to thousands of people who like cheer for you every night, and then it's like 9 p.m and you're like, I guess I'm just gonna watch TV and no one's gonna cheer for me and it sucks and I hate everything. And then you get used to home and then you do cool shit and you hang out with your kids and your family and it's awesome. But the first few days is not a relief. It's like full chaos.
Yeah. It's like, what do you want for dinner? I was like, oh, I was thinking, you know, 6 Diet Cokes and some diced pineapple. Yeah, maybe I'll roll up some cheese inside this cold cut.
And then at 3 a.m. I'm having an entire pizza.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Do you find that
making nachos at 4 in the morning?
Yeah. This is what we do.
Is it also like a lot of like bits energy? Like everyone's ready to be bits. Like, I'm dying and we're doing, this is a joke. This is like our new thing now.
Yeah.
Oh my God. My wife.
And the one person
is
not ready for
fucking
that.
Fucking irritated with the bits.
My husband calls it tour talk. And like I'll say something and he'll be like, tour talk. It's just like, I don't know what you're talking about. I wasn't there when this joke was created.
Yeah. Don't know these jokes.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Well, I mean, the process of touring at all, similar to kind of like being a baseball player, the process of touring at all is so different than what, all right, what are we laughing at?
Just Adam.
Silverware? Yeah.
Banging this fucking cereal around. This total disrespect for the best podcast in the world.
Well, honestly, Mike was the first ever eater on the podcast.
I had to eat some eggs. I was very hungry early in the morning.
I had the kid all morning.
Yeah, famously, Mike did that. So we don't actually see it as a sign of disrespect. No, we see it as assimilating. Just like the whole idea of like not being home for months and months and being in a different city and traveling with people. It's one of the things that like being in a band like for an extended period of time seems almost so impossible to me because of the amount of time that you're spending with people that you're also working with, that you're also traveling with, that you're like, you know what I mean? Like that part of, I'm sure a lot of it is fun, but a lot of it is so much different than the natural human condition.
Yeah. I think that's why touring breaks people and they quit music. But I feel like if you've been doing it for as long as the guys in the War on Drugs, like it's because you're in the right group of people, you have the right personality, you're the right sort of like demeanor to be like, yeah, I'm totally okay with being physically surrounded by other people 24 hours a day. And like, I like these people and they don't make me want to punch them and it's all great. But I feel like a lot of people have fun in their 20s and then they leave. Because they're like, this is horrible. I can't do this.
Yeah, it's like a young person's thing, you know? Yeah.
I always hear about like other bands having these like endless arguments and fights and explosions and so-and-so can't be in the same room with this. It's like, I don't know. We just don't have any of that. Maybe we're just lucky or a good, gonna have like a lucky combination of personalities, but there's not really any fighting at all ever actually. You know, sometimes people get like moody, of course. And
when Adam doesn't have his rolled up cheese.
Yeah. When the rolled up cheese runs low. Yeah. Or, you know, when there's problems roll at home on the vineyard.
Somebody roll up my cheese.
But no, we just, I don't know. Just kind of very, very blessed to have the seven people we have. And we have a killer crew as well. You know, so really our band is bigger than seven. We have, you know, some crew members that have been with us for many years and basically are in the band.
We
have a great crew.
I apologize for like the normal music questions, but rank the grapes, red, purple. No, I'm just kidding. you did like headline the Garden, which is like, you know, like the arena or whatever. Do you ever like take a step back and you're like, fucking A, like this is so fucking cool. Like I imagine you get wrapped up in the day to day of it and this isn't right and that's right and that was fun and on to the next one. But just like a breather, like 5 minutes where you're like sitting back and you're like headlining Madison Square Garden. Like, how the fuck did this happen? Like, do you have those moments?
Sometimes I feel like those, at least for me, they happen maybe during the show, you know, before it's too like, I just get a little preoccupied with like what's about to happen, you know what I mean? And making sure that I'm emotionally prepared and that I feel good and that my throat feels good and that I had a nap if I needed a nap, you know what I mean? Like, that my daily routine is kind of like on point that day. But usually, and in the middle of the show, if the show's kind of, and Madison Square Garden was actually one where you could feel it on the stage that we were having a really great time. It was also a strange night because it was that huge blizzard in New York.
Yep.
I remember there was a huge blizzard and
deep.
I don't know how many people wanted to have come. It was probably 10,000 people there. And there was also, you know, it was during this last COVID, huge COVID Omicron wave. So we were kind of dealing with two different things, where people might not wanted to have traveled out, but on that stage in that moment, when however many people were there, we could feel it, that it was like a really special thing. Like everybody there was like really excited to be there and we were playing great. And I think after, like at the end of a tour is when you kind of are like, whoa, that was like really amazing and special. That's the way I, more for me, like, but you have to remember too, people who come, family and friends that come see those shows, you know, they're going to, they're making a point to go see you at Madison Square Garden. You know, they're kind of like,
right.
And you, in some way, like you can feel it from their presence that you're a part of something pretty special. But I mean, I don't even think I haven't even really processed the last year of tour. Like, not so much like, oh, all the amazing things we've done, but just how intense it was and just the music, like musical growth of the band and what, you know, what it sets us up for in the next couple of years musically. And like, it just happens, you know, and you're just like, me, I'm just trying to like stay healthy for the next show and, you know, and like, yeah, but I mean, but then you do MSG and you're like, wow, I can't believe we'd play Madison Square Garden, you know?
Yeah. I was,
does it suck that you can only get 220 people to come to your show?
I know.
It's kind of a fall from grace a little bit.
I know.
For me, like not going to shows for, you know, however long it was, year and a half, however long the show thing was. And then I got to go back. I just remember having moments, two specific ones. One, when I saw Rage Against the Machine at the Garden. And then the other one, it was great. And then the other one, when I went out to see, I had never been to Red Rocks before, so I saw Amos Lee at Red Rocks. And,
oh, wow.
And there were moments at both of those shows where like I almost teared up because I was so happy to be experiencing like music with a group of people who are experiencing it at the same time at that sort of like level of expertise on the stage, like all of those things that I had taken for granted that, that I appreciate now that because I couldn't do them for a year and a half. And I wonder if your inability to tour for a while, gave you some of that when you were playing those shows, you know, the return to the road.
Yeah. I mean, also the MSG show was basically the sixth show of that tour.
Yeah.
You know, the first couple were in Texas and, the first week was kind of, it was more strange because it was the first time you were getting thrown back into like, you know, that what you're talking about, which is like a packed room of people and watching a band, you know?
Yeah.
It was like from our point of view, we were also like at the beginning of us. So we were like finding our footing on some of the songs and like, but actually I would say Philly was maybe the first. We did two nights at the Met. And I think that, what does that hold, Mike? 4,600 people? Oh, do the math. times two, Mike. Put that in the AI simulator.
Cage fight right now. You and me. Right.
Let me go to OpenAI. Yeah.
But I feel like when we, yeah, those were, it was like, whoa, like we're really in this crowded room and the band has gelled. And, you know, it was, and then by the time we got to MSG the next night, it was like, that was, I think the main thing going on in that room was just like, we're all here despite all these things that,
yeah,
you know, could prevent us from being here. And it's been a long time and yeah, it's special.
Dave, Eliza.
At the end of the pandemic, I did a short tour and I was like, you know, so excited and had so much fun. I was just filling in for somebody in a band. And then at the end of that week, I went to a show. It was the first show I had been to. And I went and saw Me Without You, which is a great Philadelphia band. And
it was your final tour. Yeah.
Yeah. Final tour.
Yeah.
I cried like hysterically for an hour and a half. Like they started playing and I was just like, oh my God, just like was so overwhelmed with like love and joy and excitement that like, you know, it was all happening again. But I think, you know, when we were touring, I feel like those first shows were just like, there was so much nervousness because I did not know what I was doing at all. So I was just like concentrating really hard and panicking. And then also being like so nervous, like all these people in Texas are definitely getting COVID because none of them have masks on and we're in this huge, you know, outbreak moment. But it, like, by the time we got to Philly and then Madison Square Garden, it was like I knew what I was doing. I could like feel the music and I could feel the crowd and I could feel their excitement. I could like feel all of that like love and joy in the room. And it was awesome. It was like, it's, you know, it's a really intense feeling, but it like took a week to get that back. It wasn't like we played the first show and it was like, oh my God, it was just, we played that first show and I was like, I did it. Okay. Next one.
Right.
I'm really lucky because there's like a couple points during the set where I don't play for like a minute or two.
Mm.
Which like Adam definitely never has that. Robbie never has that. He's playing like 30 keyboards. Eliza, you've got a million things happening up there. But I have like times where I can just be like, oh, you know, I just sit, I wait to come in for like 2 minutes and I can just sort of take it in. And those are always the moments when I'm looking around Red Rocks or MSG and kind of getting chills or yeah. But there was definitely times when I would feel my eyes like bubble up a little bit just from, you know, the entry into playing shows, which was just so great. We're so blessed to have, like, you know, our fans were killer too.
Where did I see you guys in LA? Where'd you guys play?
Yeah,
in
the Shrine.
The Shrine.
That was an awesome show.
You were there?
I was there. I was staring right. I was right in line with Dave and Eliza, and I was so certain that they were both looking at me the whole time. I was like, they're both looking at me this whole time. I'm like locked in with them. They're doing this whole thing for me.
That was a good one. That was a good show.
That was great. What was it like? You guys were like bumper music for like baseball playoffs. What was that like?
Yeah. It was great. Awesome. I mean,
sick.
I mean, it was cool.
You were also writes Ricky Sanchez bumper music for about a month. So wondering.
Apparently some soccer music.
Oh, really?
I don't think of like...
Are you guys soccer guys?
No, not at all. I don't think of like... Look, you guys are hands down one of my top tier bands. And it took me out of the baseball games when it would play your songs. I'd be like, what? This isn't, shouldn't be it. It's not like a jingle. You know what I mean?
Where's Fall Out Boy? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How did you feel about it? Like playing only just like a snippet of the song?
I mean, I'd feel a lot cooler if it was like blasting over the PA when Bryce Harper, if it's like his walk-on music every time.
Oh, that'd be cool. Have you guys been walk-on music, to your knowledge?
No, I think that's up to the player, right? Don't they each have their own song?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we got to get a Philly to choose War on Drugs.
I'm going to join the Philadelphia Phillies and War on Drugs.
Are you guys baseball guys?
Yeah.
I'm a baseball guy, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a great couple weeks.
It was fun.
It was really fun.
Really was.
It reminds you there is something about, I think, you know, soccer actually included, there's something about the sports where there's not a lot of scoring that makes playoffs just so much more intense. Hockey, baseball, and soccer are like that. But it'd been so long since the Phillies played a playoff game. Like you watch the other games and it's fun, but you don't have like that same juice and reminding what that juice is like. It's literally like every pitch feels like the end of the world, you know? And only those sports that don't have a lot of scoring do it, you know? Is there a last like touring question? You are recognized as being great live band. Everybody says War on Drugs, great live band. What do you think that means? Like, what does that mean when somebody says that you're a great live band?
I think it means that they're familiar with the songs and the recordings and the records maybe, and they come and we're up there, we're having fun. I think the main thing is that they see guys having like fun with each other.
Right.
And they see people on their plane who are having fun. They don't know what's going on in my head. But what they see is people having fun and enjoying each other and laughing, which is, it's all true. And, you know, and we, you know, we like spend a lot of time delivering, you know, it's like a, you know, it's a product, you know, it's like you want to deliver something that someone's going to pay for. You want it to be, they feel like they come to the show and they feel like they got their money's worth, especially now. And so we have great lights, you know, our lighting guy, Ben, has been with us almost 10 years. he's like a wizard. He's great lights that really work with the music. It's not a show as much as it's just like another instrument on that stage. And I think we're just all, we just take our craft seriously, you know? So it comes across. And, you know, we had somebody recently in St. Petersburg who was convinced we were 100% tracks.
So pissed. And
then went on this like Reddit tirade about how he came to the show and we were just miming to a computer or something.
And, fucking mad. He singled me out as saying like Dave didn't even seem like he was trying to mime the bass lines.
Wow.
That's good.
Yeah. Maybe it was open AI the entire time. It didn't even write the songs, much less like play that. Them.
Right.
Fucking guy your ass.
It was funny. It somebody said in the YouTube chat that it meant that you sound good live, but like that isn't it. Just as somebody who there are plenty of it's part of it, of course, but there are plenty of bands who sound good live who people don't walk away saying that was a great show. And there are plenty of bands who sound iffy live who people walk away saying they had a great time. If you can do both, it's great, right? But I think there's something about like the connection, I think, that great live bands have that is between you and the audience that like separates it. I think there's a lot of different ways to be a great live band, I guess.
Personally, I think it's like everybody in the band and in the crew kind of takes their craft so seriously. So when I see Adam like tweaking his pedals so endlessly to get this tone, it like makes me be like, oh shit, it kind of pushes you to go deeper as well. And then there's this sort of exponentiating effect. You know, John is always back there tweaking his fucking horn, you know, like always chasing various tones and pedal settings and stuff. And it's just when everybody is kind of trying to go really deep, it kind of influences the other people to do the same thing. And then you just, I think it kind of has like a totality effect. So, and in our crew too, I mean, we have like just this, you know, Dom, our guitar tech, he's just so into like the little details, and all those little details add up to, I think, a good show.
Yeah.
I think the nature of your music also is very like surrounding, like you get like enveloped.
It's atmospheric, I think.
Yeah.
It creates a, like a, that's what I was trying to say about it feeling like the winner, you know, it creates
like a big
atmosphere.
Blanket.
Yeah.
Like I'm just like, I'm under there and I can't breathe and it's great.
We're killing
you. I'm slowly dying.
I think Adam also does a really good job of redirecting a set sometimes. Like we'll get to the end of a song and what's next, adding some sort of sense like this is not where we need to be right now, and call an audible and we have to sort of like pivot. And I think that
RTC
like real-time curveball.
That happens like during a concert on the show.
Oh yeah, constantly. Oh, yeah.
How do you convey that?
Like a point guard, you guys would understand that.
Thank you for putting it in terms.
You wave off the pick.
Yeah.
We have mics that you can talk into that just go to each other's ears.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's just sort of like,
We're going to release a whole record of just the talk to stage mics. So the mics, we each have one, like it's by my amps. I'll go back there and click a button with my foot and then talk into it. And everybody on the stage and all the crew can hear me. So I'll be like, I need a Diet Coke or... or
grapes stat,
and people will like tell what they need, like monitor wise, be like, lol, I need more snare drum, whatever. But there's just, because it's an intense moment, like the most classic talk to stage moment was when our tour manager Craig filled in for Dave because Dave had COVID in Detroit. And so Craig is an amazing bass player, and you know, he's been with us a long time, so he basically knows the songs, but he didn't know all the new songs. So he crammed for like 12 hours to learn all the songs, the new songs in his hotel room. It was Chicago. It was the first night in Chicago. And he played the first song. I forget what the song was, probably Old Skin. And then the talk to stage mic is like, my finger froze up. I'm something. What is it? It's like,
I
can't feel my hand.
I can't feel my hands. I'm fucking dehydrated.
That's right. Yeah. Because after like the first song, like not really the most like challenging song. But it was just like everything, like the 16 hours of like insane rehearsal in this hotel room led to that moment of like.
He was so stressed.
I can imagine. He sounds terrifying.
Job. He played great. I mean, it was great.
He's such a good player. I called him. I was like, dude, are you stoked? You get to play the Chicago Theater. He was like, dude, you better be fucking drinking fluids. I'm not fucking doing this again. You fucking blew my mind here.
And so do you tell the audience? Like, so Dave's sick. We have this other guy.
Well, we kind of did. I put Dave's drug rug on a hanger and hung it for his amp.
Oh, there you go.
And,
in memoriam.
Obviously, people knew Dave was not there, but you know, that's the thing. It's like the audience did not even know that Craig could not feel his arm and that he is dehydrated. You know what I mean? And like when we did Austin City Limits Festival a couple of weeks ago, my pedal board controls the drum machine stuff and controls a couple of MIDI things that get sent around, and it just died in the middle of that show, you know. And it's on Hulu, it's being streamed all over the world on Hulu, and there's like whatever 50,000 people there watching it in person.
Wow.
And basically the heart of the show went down halfway through the show, just stopped working, and Dom is out there fixing it, and I'm yelling into the talk mic like, the controller's broken. If you listen to that, it sounds like, you know, the Apollo 13 reentry, you know what I mean? But in reality, if you just watch, you wouldn't even know like that anything was really happening, you know? In some way, the talk to stage mic is like, you can kind of let some of that anxiety out without people knowing that you're, sure, that you're freaking, you know? I kind of use it for a lot. Like I kind of use it. Sometimes I just yell into it and, so yeah. I forget that everybody on stage can hear it, but it's kind of just a way to like, you're standing up there, you're trying to keep this show together, you're trying to entertain, quote unquote, like, you know, 80,000 people, let's say, in the Netherlands. And you need like a place you can just like yell and just be like, I'm freaking, or like, this is a great show, you know, because you have to like kind of just put on this sort of this, you know, idea of a show. So me and Dominic, we've been talking about doing a talk to stage record with just all basically what happens in that talk to stage mic.
Amazing. Do you turn around when you're doing it, being like, oh fucking shit, like,
yeah.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it's basically just this mic, it's mined by my amplifiers, and I just, you know, everyone has theirs right next to them basically, so you just click a switch with your foot and then talk into it, and it goes to everyone's ears.
Amazing.
Well, I mean, you joke, but people, like, in the same way that people love,
I gotta get my charger.
This fucking guy.
Great run.
Oh, pro.
Well, in the same way that people like watching like mic'd up on for a football player or a basketball team, sure, there's people would fucking love to hear that.
Yeah, totally.
Like, just record it for an entire tour and pick one where it wouldn't make somebody sound like an enormous fucking asshole, and pick that one or whatever and release it.
Yeah,
I think
we always record
them.
Yeah. We're not joking. Yeah, we do record it every night. And I was trying to push for getting all the crew talk mics to come out of the PA while we were like walking to the stage, because there's so much going on with our like, our production manager's like, stage right, good to go, whoop, whoop, like all this like fucking, again, it sounds like, you know, NASA shit, and a lot of like kind of hilarious lingo and in jokes and stuff. But
yeah, I think it would be awesome. I think people would love it, you know. Before we let you all go, I want to make sure that anyone who has like a specific Sixers take they need to get off their chest.
Mm.
I don't know if it's a Doc take or Joe take or Harden or something, but like, this is a good opportunity to do so. I know now Adam is like basically like a Celtic guy or something. Is that the rumor, or deep down in your gut?
Deep down, I grew up going to a ton of Celtics games, because my uncle, my dad's brother, had season tickets. So he would give my dad like 15 a year. This was Old Garden, first balcony,
wow,
third row, center court.
Oh, Great seat.
So, and that was a day like when maybe they still do it, but me and my brother, basically my dad, I would just, they would just let me under the turnstile, you know?
Yeah.
So I'd be like four or five and there'd be three of us, but he only had two seats. But I was at the game. My mom and dad actually, well, they were at Jordan 63.
Wow.
They were at the game when DJ stole the ball, when Bird stole the ball underneath the DJ.
Wow.
My brother went to Larry Bird night. My parents were at that game when Ralph Sampson like broke his back. Remember that game?
No.
Ralph Sampson went up for a Houston Rockets, went up for a rebound and basically came like straight down and was like on the ground on the parquet for like an hour.
Mm. Yeah.
Yes. You remember Craig Roberts?
No. Is he a bench Celtics guy?
Yeah, bench, but the one game he had like 39 fucking points. Look it up. Little flat top Craigie. Craig Roberts. He had some epic game.
He's not even one of the first three Craig Robertses on Google, by the way. This is a deep cut. This is definitely a deep cut.
If it was social media in whatever that was, 87, he would have been like, yeah, he would have had some crazy contract like the next day, but it was just it's just this crazy freak game that disappeared into nothing.
Well, Celtics are pretty fucking good, unfortunately.
Are they right good? Now. I don't fault. Right, you asked me a question. Crazy, I don't really good. Know who I. Yeah. I don't really.
Yeah, yeah.
I like certain players.
Yeah,
but I don't really know anything about what's going on. I didn't even know Doc Rivers was still the coach until I looked at a tweet this morning.
Well, I got to tell you, it's
some controversy.
Not optimal. Yeah. Dave, Eliza, anything in your guts? You know, you two have been close during this whole thing.
I am born and raised in Philadelphia.
Yes.
So I am a lifelong Sixers fan.
Yep.
I have really enjoyed this era of injuries because it felt like process ball.
Yes.
It was just like a bunch of dudes who had no idea what was going on, just fucking up plays. And I loved it. It was so fun. And when they would lose, it'd be like, well, of course they lost. Like, these dudes don't know what's going on. And then they would win. And you would feel just like a true joy feeling where you'd be like, B-Ball Paul is the greatest basketball player alive. Melton is going to be the next fucking big shit. Shake Milton needs more time because he's going to start. Like, if he can get a pick and roll going with B-Ball Paul, like, everything is going to be incredible. I just loved it. I am happy. Well, for the good players to come back, but I have really enjoyed this shit show of the last few weeks.
Hell yeah.
Well, we got to blow it up. Blow it up, run the process.
Blow it up.
Start yeah.
Yep. Two or three more times.
Two or three more processes, and then I think we'll be ready to.
We'll be really good at it by then.
I think it's going to help them too, because it's just like there's no. There's
Forever
no,
the optimist.
Yeah.
There's Fred no Roberts. Bench.
Yeah. I'm
Fred Roberts.
Fred Roberts.
That's why I couldn't find him. That's I think totally when I was googling him,
I feel like I've heard of him. Maybe
there he is.
Yeah.
It does speak to the. It's really like your enjoyment of sports is 100% based on what your expectation of the team is.
Yeah,
like it really is. And the higher the expectation, the lower the chance you're going to be happy, because the lower the chance that you're going to reach it. And it is.
Yeah.
It really like does speak to the first 40 years of this, when there was little expectation. The only thing that we had was like the future, but we didn't expect anything at that moment. And that's what it is. It's all about expectations. And now, you know, to your point, without the good players there, you're like, fuck, whatever. They lost.
Yeah. You're going to lose. You don't have Embiid or Maxey or Harden or Harris. You're going to lose. It's fine. Yeah.
You got the fucking band manager on bass.
Yeah.
you're gonna lose.
Doesn't know the songs.
Happens sometimes.
The singer's mic still doesn't work. You know? Oh, there he is.
Come on now.
Wow. A Celtics background.
I feel like
Ricky.
You've been on this podcast three times now. You're a Sixers fan.
Yeah, he's a Sixers fan. It rubs off on him.
For sure.
Who's that? Me?
Yeah, you. You're a Sixers fan.
Oh, I love the Sixers.
Fan.
Yeah.
Yeah. what is happening?
Oh, no. Dave's background is Adam.
Very good. We're back on tour.
Yeah, there we go.
Taking it back to March 2020.
Yeah. Well, looking forward to the shows. It's really great that you're doing it. Honestly, a band of like your stature, I think, doing shows in a place that small for a local cause, not just a good one, but like a local one to Philadelphia, I think is really amazing. Like when you just say out loud, the war on drugs at Johnny Brenda's, like anyone who is in the scope of understanding who the band is would say, oh, that's fucking, that's amazing. Even my wife, who doesn't really like, she's not like a music person. She likes music, but she like doesn't follow it. I said, you know, Warren Drugs is playing Johnny Brenda's. And she's like, wait, they're really big, aren't they? And I said, yes. So even she knew it was a big deal. It's just, it's a really good thing that you do. And I think it should be appreciated. And I'm sure the shows will be great and the auctions will be great.
And you guys go back to those bigger venues.
One day.
You guys will, once you'll, you'll climb
Don't
back,
worry, Adam.
You'll climb back up.
Yeah.
Wait, Spike, yeah, are you going to be at one of the shows? Like,
we played two shows at the Met earlier in the year. And this is, you know, this is the year where like everyone, bands that even aren't even together anymore, were reuniting and going on tour again, you know?
Yeah.
And people want to see a lot of different bands, you know? We did two shows in Philly, and then we did, this summer, we did the XPN Fest in Camden with Patti Smith, and that was a lot of tickets, and we didn't feel like, it would have been cool if we did, like, some huge drug sember in a bunch of different places, but we just wanted to do something fun and modest, and that didn't require a ton of moving gear around from here to there, and, you know, it's, you know, it, are putting on our whole show production or whatever. Like, we just wanted to do something at the end of this year that was like going to be fun and maybe a little smaller. And Brenda's has always just been, we just love hanging out there. You know, it's not even like, let's be honest, it's not even like the best place to play. You know, it's the stage is like, and the stage is kind of in the weird part of the room, and it's
like in the corner, isn't it? I've been
it's
there.
In the
years.
It's like a weird thing, but it's like our place, you know. And like we've seen a million shows there, we've played there a bunch of times. We've had some great memories from there. We've hung out downstairs. It's like it's our old neighborhood, you know. That's just, you know, I lived, you know, a block from Brenda's for a long time, so it's exciting. It's cool. It's cool to come back and do something for Philly. I mean, you know, it's what, you know, it's the most important part of what we do is being able to, you know, do something for the school district or any nonprofit of your choice, you know, bring people together and give them a reason to come out on a, you know, during the holidays. So yeah.
Yeah. It's awesome. The auction, I'm sure, will be awesome. Do you want to give any sneak preview item? I did see the War on Drugs golden ticket will be auctioned, where you can go to any War on Drugs show for 5 years. Would be wild for you guys just not to tour for 5 years, just like as a bit. Auction that off and then do that as a bit.
I will say we have a lot of really cool things. One of my oldest friends in Philly. Well, I knew him before we lived in Philly, but he was just voted best chef in Philly 2022 from I believe Philadelphia Inquirer. He's an amazing chef. He works at a great restaurant in Rittenhouse Square.
You can give it what's his name?
A Kitchen. His name is Eli Collins.
Okay.
And he just donated, him and his company donated an amazing meal to the auction. And there's going to be a lot of things like that. We have vacation getaways, you know, it's
with you.
Exactly. I will come, you know, we ready to, you know, I'll be the third wheel, you know.
Amazing.
You were going to the beach. I don't go to the beach, you know, this whole thing. They got a lot of great things, and that's going to happen in the end of January, and that's going to be hosted by Julian's Auctions, which is a really famous auction house. I've actually bought some equipment. They did like the Walter Becker auction from Steely Dan. I bought a bass, so they know what they're doing, and they're helping us out. And so there's just a lot of things, and there's going to be, you know, signed stuff from our band and some signed instruments that I might just auction off some pedals of mine or something or whatever, you know, just, you know, it's going to be great.
I'm sure.
Success.
Yeah.
Well, we love fucking around with you guys.
Yeah. You're welcome.
It's always fun to do this.
Anytime. Maybe one day, Adam, will get the technical part figured out moving forward, perhaps.
I think we got it.
I know. This headphone thing, you know, the one time you need to connect. I turn these things on, they connect to 15 different things. I'm like, I'm just listening to the Ricky podcast, you know?
Yeah.
And I actually need them. And then it's like, I can't get them to connect. And then, you know.
There you go.
You're yelling at me.
yeah, well, this show's obviously.
I did see one tweet.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
And I just wanted to set the record straight. I did work at O'Neill's.
Right. So somebody on. I want to give the person credit. Hold on. Who asked?
Were you a good bouncer?
What do you think?
It was from Zucchini Spread. Of course, a Zucchini Spread on Twitter got into Adam's head by doubting that he actually worked at O'Neill's. that's prime internet right there. You're like, fucking Zucchini Spread doesn't even think I worked at O'Neill's.
Yeah.
So you were a bouncer there?
I was a bouncer on Fridays and sometimes Saturday nights.
Okay.
Do you bounce
outside and carded people?
Yeah, you ever have to drag anybody out by their collar or something?
No.
Okay.
Like the one time, I won't say why, because it was
bad.
But the bartender, this huge guy, I think his name's Spoonie, he had to kick these two guys out. And he like basically drags them out, throws them on the street, and I'm like, yeah, get out of here.
That's good. You know, all right, that's convincing.
I'm the guy to let him in, but...
Take that, Zucchini Spread.
Yeah. Like a Zucchini
Spread. That's where I started getting into the Eagles, because before that I wasn't really into football. Because I grew up in Mass and the Patriots were terrible, you know.
Speaking of the Eagles, what a great job Charlie did with the Christmas music.
Dude, totally. I know.
Can they really? It looks like they can fucking sing.
They can absolutely sing.
Definitely.
It's amazing.
I mean, Eliza was there too, like teaching them how to sing.
It's why Mylata and Kelsey like look like they can really sing.
Lane Johnson can also really, really sing. He has this incredible baritone. It's amazing. It was wild. Like I came in to do like vocal warmups and talk about like breath control and how to land on a pitch. And then like Jordan Mylata opened his mouth and I was like, all right, I'm unnecessary here.
Had he
they're
been
amazing.
Had he been trained before or was he just naturally?
No, they just all, I mean, like the beautiful genesis of this is that it's like those three guys play together and they hang out in the locker room and they sing songs together for fun because they love each other and they're friends. And then they were like, we should do a Christmas album. We should sing together. So they're used to singing together. Like their whole vibe with each other too is just like in the studio cheering each other on and like giving each other confidence and just being so sweet and so loving to each other, but they can all like legitimately sing. It's amazing. But wow. Jordan can like sing. Like Jordan should quit football and be a singer.
You know, we've lied to ourselves a lot of times over the years being like, oh, the vibes of the Sixers are great, man. They look like they're really getting along. And every time it was just a big fucking lie, but the Eagles, like when you look at them, they really truly do look like they enjoy each other.
Yeah.
You know, like
it's exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure the shows will be fucking awesome. Oh, Dave, a Sixers take before we go. Do you have one? Do you have anything you need to get off
vibes.
Your...
I'm not worried about the wins and losses anymore. I'm a vibe guy. I'm not a playoff motherfucker. I'm a vibe motherfucker. I just want people to get along, have fun. Anybody who's harsh on the vibes, get them out.
Get them out. Mm-hmm. Daniel House, get them out.
What's the record?
Doesn't matter, Adam.
What's the record?
Doesn't matter.
Wait, didn't Joel Embiid have like 60 points a couple weeks ago?
He did.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
You guys should be talking about that.
Oh, shit.
I mean, it was amazing.
You should talk about how great that was.
We forgot to talk about it. Two podcasts a week,
points.
We forgot to talk about how good Joel was.
Yeah. Points, no one's talking about it.
Yeah, we had so many other things to get to. We weren't able to find the time. Well, I'm sure the shows will be amazing. If you want to, the best way to check out the auction stuff is just sign up for the newsletter, right? On the website. That is the best way to accomplish that.
I believe so. Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yep.
And selling out in 5 minutes. I mean, not bad. Not bad at all.
Eliza's in the bed.
We're psyched. Yeah. We're honored. We're psyched. We're so happy to have such a great community in Philly. We love being a part of Philly. And,
by the way, your fucking manager guy, Steve, that guy's on top of stuff. I don't know if if seems like I deal with a lot of people. He's like on top of shit. So good guy. Seems like you got a good one there.
Great ball player. Second baseman.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Did he like really?
Yeah.
Where did he play? Do you know?
Yale.
Well, yeah, in any really case,
helpful. He's been really helpful with
the auction. Everything. The Julian's thing is awesome too. Having them involved with the auction, I mean, that's real shit, man. I mean, they know what they're doing.
No, and that makes like the whole reach of this whole thing like, you know, international. You know, and
beyond
like,
the three shows. You know, the auction part of it makes it bigger and better than those three shows. Yeah,
exactly. And like, and that it's, you know, it's going to be a month after those shows. So it really gives time for people to hear about it and check stuff out and see if there's something they want to bid on and know that their money's going to a great cause. And something we hope to be a part of every year in some capacity, you know?
Well, you are welcome every year to,
and then there'll be a year where we're doing Johnny Brenda's and people are like, is this Drug December? We're like, no, we just, you know,
we play here now.
We're playing Johnny Brenda's again.
And that's Mike's big moment.
And Mike will be there taking the ticket to the door saying, I told him.
I'll be bouncing.
He eats grapes in my show. I told him he'd be, you don't eat grapes in this town.
Even though where's he live? Grapes in this town again.
Where's he live?
Well, good luck with the shows. Good luck with the auction. Congrats, by the way, on an awesome year. Just an awesome, awesome year. Of course, as we mentioned before you got on, Adam, of course, it started all right here, if we're being honest about it, the night the record came out. So congrats, and also you're welcome. And anytime. Yep. Yeah. Anytime you need a great album cycle, we're there to help out. So, thank you for being on the pod, but also thank you for doing the shows and doing what you do to raise money for the Philly Public Schools. They need it, and I'm sure it's appreciated there too.
Absolutely.
It'd be great.
Thanks for having us.
Looking forward to seeing everybody there and taking over the corner of Frankfurt and Girard.
Mm-hmm. We need to get Mike on a plane to come to the gigs.
Yeah.
Do it.
Get him on a plane. Strap him on. All right, y'all.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
See you guys.
Thanks.
This is that weird time at the end of the pod where they're still there, even though they're done. There we go.
Adam will be here forever.
Yep.
I don't know how to leave.
You can just turn off. Eliza.
She did it.
She did it.
The Brett Brown thing.
Yeah. Thanks to War on Drugs. That is, it is like Mike and I joke on the pod and off the pod. Like they are the, like one of the biggest bands in the like world right now, you know, current bands. And the fact that they come on here to promote their shit is really neat. And it's so cool to see Eliza in War on Drugs.
Yeah, man.
Right. You know, she's an original Rickier. I mean, the emotional, the relationship advice theme has been there for years.
Long time.
All right. Well, the Sixers, you know, whatever. Harden's back on Monday. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the rumor. So sign up for the newsletter so you can get the War on Drugs auction. And if you don't have tickets, I don't know. Shit out of luck. Bummer. We'll talk to you next time. Are you down with TTP?
Yeah. You know. Click face.
Uh-oh. I don't know how to. I have to stop this. That's right.
To show you. Just slam your computer down.
If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you. If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you.
If you don't fuck with me,
If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you. But if you fuck with me,
I'm gonna fucking kill you!
Time for Plan B.